The Wolf Den is brought to you by Podcast Movement, the world's largest gathering of podcasters and podcast industry professionals. It's coming back in 2017. You can join over 2,000 fellow podcasters in Anaheim this August for 3 days of networking, panel discussions, workshops, and more. I've been to Podcast Movement. It's a lot of fun, and you should go.
I've been to conferences in Anaheim. They're fun, too.
It is. It's a sunny place in Southern California. Learn all about it at podcastmovement.com. And you can use a special code, Lex, right?
Mm-hmm. Wolf. Use the code WOLF to get the lowest registration price possible. If you register before January 9th, you get additional holiday savings. So it's podcastmovement.com and use the code WOLF.
Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and the people of podcasting.
I'm one of the people. I'm Lex Friedman.
You certainly are. I'm Chris Bannon, and I'm happy to be here today with a great guest.
Yes, our guest today is Hernan Lopez from Wondery. But before we get to the interview,
yes,
we have our favorite segment to do, Chris.
This is a segment we call Shows We're Jealous Of. It's just a way of talking about things we listen to and like and love. And Hernan will be able to contribute his thought about the show that he is jealous of in just a few minutes. We'll start with you, Lex. What's the show you're jealous of?
So a show that I'm jealous of from my friends at The Incomparable is a very short show. Episodes are typically somewhere between 2 and 5 minutes long. Hmm. And it's called Robot or Not. And the show's conceit happened when Jason Snell, the co-host, was talking to his friend John Siracusa, the other co-host, and Siracusa was arguing that some character from fiction, no, that's not a robot, for the following reasons. So each episode, Jason tees up some character or creature or item from the real world, and John weighs in on whether it is or is not a robot and explains why. They've discussed Roombas, they've discussed automated checkout machines at supermarkets, various characters like what's that guy? Baymax from Big Hero 6, the Disney mm-hmm. movie. And John weighs in on whether they're a robot or not. And it's just the show knows exactly what it is. It's not any longer than it needs to be. And I truly, when I see a new episode pop up, I listen to it instantly because it's just so fun and pithy. And John is so opinionated on what is or isn't a robot. And I just
you know,
it.
I used to work with John Siracusa.
I think you mentioned that to me.
Yes, once. He's a genius. And that sounds like a great show to listen to. And how many minutes? 5 minutes? So it's easily digested.
Yeah, and there are probably 50 episodes and they're all 2 to 5 minutes long.
So you can just binge on that.
This is not why it's a show that I love, but or am jealous of. I wrote the theme song.
Oh, there's the real heart of this recommendation right there. That
yeah, I get a royalty every time somebody listens.
Now we understand. All right, the show that I'm jealous of is one that I chose in thinking, actually unconsciously, after the election. I have been trying to decide what do I listen to understand what's going on. And it's been a big dilemma. Really.
Screaming.
Well, I mean, fortunately, I have a whole podcast network that has a lot of comedy in it. Yeah. Right? And I have found a great refuge in our own shows. If you can listen to Hannibal Buress, it kind of takes you out of your own head and into someone else's very interesting mind. But I did return to an old favorite that I hadn't actually listened to in a couple of years. WNYC has a show called On the Media, which I think is the most intelligent show that I've found to try to diagnose and understand what's going on in our culture and through the lens of media. And I've binge listened over the last week to about, I don't know, 8 episodes. I just felt the need to hear them talk in their cool and rational and occasionally outraged voices about what's going on. So I'm going to recommend that you, if you were once a listener, you return to On the Media. It's a show I'm jealous of.
Now, Hernan, I believe that you have a show that you're jealous of to share with everybody.
I have so many shows I'm jealous of. But the first one I want to highlight, a mid-roll show. It is Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Oh.
I once was at a performance by David Sedaris, and at the end of the show, they asked him, what do you do with your free time? I listen to lots of podcasts. I bet a lot of people don't know that because he's been approached to do podcasts, and he's consistently said no. He's done a radio show for the BBC.
Show and BBC, yeah.
But he did highlight Hello from the Magic Tavern. That's how I came across it.
That's awesome.
He highlighted the Dana Gold Comedy Hour, I believe, and mm-hmm. and Super Ego. Now I remember that. And of the three, the one I liked the most was Hello. And there's another show that I'm really jealous of from a business and listener perspective, and it's How I Built This. And I know we're supposed to talk about shows that nobody has heard about, but hugely popular show. And it hits all the elements as a listener and as a business that if you really, if you wanted to have a show that has a great audience, a very well dedicated audience that also has a production schedule that you can deliver on once a week, that's a show I love to have. Obviously, there's only one guy, Raz, and yep, this it.
I think NPR is already NPR trying to divide him into many, many shows.
Right? No. Yeah.
No, I think that's a great choice. Everybody would feel jealous about that. And I think the beauty of how I built this is it's a very simple idea, and it's not actually a complicated show, except that you have to be as intelligent as he is and as good as his producers are at telling a story. So,
and having that kind of access.
Yeah, exactly. So good. Excellent choice. You're off to a good start in this, Wolf Den.
Wonderful.
How can Hernan be so good at this? Well, we'll explain. Hernan Lopez is the founder and CEO of the podcasting company Wondery, which launched this past January, so almost 1 year old. Wondery produces the shows Found, Secrets, Crimes, and Audiotape, and Terms, among others. Prior to starting Wondery, we were talking before we started recording, Hernan and I were at the same company at the same time. He was much more important than I was, though. He was the CEO of Fox International Channels, where he worked for nearly two decades, where he also served as general manager of Fox Latin American Channel and as the COO of Fox International Channels. So thanks again for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. I have to start with this question, though. Why would a person as obviously intelligent and gifted, handsome and well-dressed as you, with a great career in television, decide he needed to plunge into the world of audio with the grimy likes of us?
Slumming it with us here in podcasts.
Well, my first love was radio. I don't know if you ever heard the story, but my very first job, 19 years old, I was actually doing college at night and working during the day, was at a cable and radio company where I was hired for the ad sales department to write copy for the advertisers that didn't have an agency. And even before that, as I was finishing high school, I started a show on a pirate radio station in Argentina, which was very much the predecessor of podcasting. It was kind of like illegal radio.
Right.
And I find it so great and so fascinating to come full circle into the space that I really started my love and my passion for media in. But as I look at the space of podcasting, I see a lot of parallels with cable television, the way it was when I joined. And this was 20 years ago, 25 years ago in Latin America. It was everything needed to be made. You have a consumer trend that was changing, a consumer trend that was very clear, very early, but you knew that every person that came into cable television was going to end up watching more cable television. As they watch more, then more talented producers would come and make better shows. And all we needed to do was to convince the advertising agencies that there was value in those tiny little audiences, right? That there was essentially back at the time when you were competing with broadcast television that had 15 and 20 rating points and we were coming in with 0.1 rating points. We had to tell them, why is it that as a media planner, you should buy 300 spots to get the same kind of value that you get with just one spot on broadcast, right? Sounds familiar? And I opened the doors, and so I worked in advertising sales in that job, and then my next job was radio and broadcast. And then I came back to cable because I saw that the opportunity was not only in Argentina, by then I had moved from Argentina to the U.S., to Miami, but the opportunity was very similar all over the world, and I see lots of parallels with where podcasting is today.
Mm-hmm. Now, explain for listeners who might not yet know, how do you describe what Wondery is and does?
Wondery is a network of storytellers. We create and curate podcasts, and we give them the services very similar to what Mirror does. So you have your partner shows and your originals.
Right.
Well, we have 22 shows today. Three of them are originals that are Found, Secret Scams, and Other Tape, and Terms. And 19 shows are partner shows. So these are podcasts that most of them existed before they came to us. And when they come to us, we help them increase their audience. We first move them to dynamic ad insertion. We put them on the R19 dynamic insertion platform so that everybody knows that the metrics are standard and they can essentially monetize the entire back catalog. And then we help them editorially and on marketing. We will improve the key art. Mm-hmm. We will talk to the good guys at Apple and at Stitcher and at every other platform to see that they get better placement. And so far, it's helped them increase their audience and at the same time bring advertisers on board.
I'm really curious about the word storytellers, a network of storytellers, and why you chose to define it that way, because it seems to me that's a differentiating thing about Wondery. We think of shows, you know, often in the world of podcasting. We inherited that from television and from radio. Tell me why storytellers.
When I came from Fox, I was spending a lot of time on a plane. I was listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And obviously, everybody wanted to decode what was the secret sauce behind Serial. So I never forget, there was a flight that I took back home where I binge listened to 4 episodes of Serial back to back, and I couldn't understand why I was so drawn into this crime that I had no connection with. Mm-hmm. 16 years ago, it was one of 17,000 murders that happens in the U.S. Why is it that America was so fascinated with it? And yeah, we have, and then it dawned on me, I don't know if you guys remember that in the 90s, the kind of television shows that were being made were that were the most successful were the procedurals and
yes.
the sitcoms, right? And there was a reason for that. From a programming perspective, you want to give viewers an opportunity to come in and out and be able to watch one episode out of 3 and then still understand.
Identify with a character, but find them in a new situation,
correct.
A new story.
But if you miss one episode or 2 or 3, then it really doesn't track, right? So then 2000, something very important happens. TiVo comes to be. So that's the beginning of on-demand television that you don't need to watch on a schedule or on a linear basis. You can watch it on your own time. So what show comes out of that age? The Sopranos and The Wire and 6 Feet Under. And then FX starts with The Shield and Nip Tuck. So that's the start of, in television, what we call the age of serialized character-driven drama, which means that essentially 2 things. One is that you have to and you're sort of expected to watch the shows in a sequence from beginning to end of each episode, mm-hmm. so you don't understand them otherwise. But then what happens is that it's character-driven because the plot is there at the service of the characters. So as a viewer, you get emotionally more invested with the characters, right? So in audio, you never had a TiVo moment. In audio, if you look at all the history of radio, radio is meant to be consumed on...
Immediately.
Live, immediately. Right. So it's essentially... doesn't have shelf life, and is not constructed in the way that Serial was constructed, so where listeners are expected to listen to every minute.
It used to be. I think in the old days, when it was the dominant medium, it was that way. And then when it became sort of subservient to television, it gave us immediacy instead.
Precisely. So my the idea behind Wondery was, what if we can turn all the skill sets that creators of television have, and my co-founder, Jeffrey Glazer, who comes from 20th Century Fox Television. He was overseeing Modern Family and 24 and The Simpsons and Family Guy and Glee, and put them
to shame. He never had any hits.
I know. What such a slacker. And put them to the service of audio storytelling, but in a way that there was just no commercial model for it before,
right.
Because it wasn't a way to exploit a show. You couldn't get people to tune in to... linear radio every Thursday at 9
right.
p.m.
Can I ask you a question before? I know Lex has a question too, but I'm really curious. Do you feel that the explosion of podcasting and audio on demand will lead audio inevitably to that same serialization that you saw happen in television? Are we going to go have the same fate?
Not necessarily, because not every show in television is serialized. You have mm-hmm. many shows that are close-ended. You have cable news that's live. You have sports that's live. You have close-ended television in many respects. But the kind of shows that created the biggest brand equity in television, just you name any television drama, be Game of Thrones or be The Crown, that they're typically character-driven, serialized dramas.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, you know, you think about one of the most popular shows on television, to my great befuddlement, remains The Big Bang Theory, which is exactly the opposite, right? Standard sitcom can be syndicated forever. And I would imagine, as you made your DVR point earlier, that the households that make The Big Bang Theory a hit are probably not TiVoing it nearly as much as people are TiVoing This Is Us on NBC as like a character-driven drama. It's pretty. So given your background and your understanding of this, the content creation space, What made you decide to launch Wondery as a network, as a, you know, kind of a mid-roll-esque network in some ways, versus you could have done, hey, let's make a production company to just create these kinds of great shows? Why did you decide to take the broader network approach of we're going to do in-house shows, we're going to be an ad rep, and those different pieces?
Because I know that today the single biggest source of revenue is still advertising, and at some point we will have a consumer revenue line as well, but I see podcasting as a space where the majority of the revenue will come from advertising. And so that's such a core function that I couldn't outsource to you guys. You guys would have been the ideal. David Raphael would have been the ideal, other ideal partner. And if I'd chosen any one of the two of you guys, I would have been very lucky. But it was a skill set that we needed to develop in-house. Mm-hmm. And in order to develop that skill set in-house, we need scale, we need volume. Sure. So we couldn't do it with just our own shows.
And do you find how do you manage an editorial process around products that you don't actually make yourself? I mean, we don't really do that very often, except as sometimes a courtesy or out of friendship with some of our clients. But if you have a network of shows that you're actually offering editorial assistance to, you have to have people to do that and a sense of what they'll receive in terms of feedback and all of that. Have you built that process yet, or is it still fairly ad hoc?
It's fairly ad hoc. So every time that we bring a show on, we're very selective about the shows that we bring on board, and we listen to them. We want to make sure that the host cares about the show, that they don't see it as a side business, that they don't see it as a distraction.
Very good principle.
And so typically those are the hosts that will be receptive to the kind of feedback that we're going to give them. But some of the feedback is obvious. It's about improving the audio quality. It's about consistency. It's about the episode descriptions. Some of it is less obvious. It's about how the effect that a just simple change in the key art can have on whether a show gets downloaded or not downloaded.
Oftentimes, just the way you title an episode. If you look at the way episode titles appear on your phone, for instance, we have this running conversation about Stranglers, in fact, because we were titling the episodes with the something something. I said, cut the. It takes up one third of the room that I have to tell people what the show's about, right?
We obsess about things like that. In fact, when I was in the UK, we launched the FX channel, and the electronic program guide was one of the most competitive sections of real estate. And people, they had teams that looked exactly at the impact, and they would go and retitle the exact same episode, change the title, and see different results.
Yeah, wow.
I want to ask you a little bit about Fox and its role as an investor in Wondery, but because I'm familiar with audio, I know that I should tease it. So I'm going to ask you about that right after this break. Once again, I remind you, we are brought to you by Podcast Movement, the world's largest gathering of podcasters and podcast industry professionals, and it's coming back in 2017. Podcast Movement offers over 100 sessions on various topics that appeal to everyone from new and experienced podcasters to producers to industry professionals and everything in between.
Let me tell you about the speakers that we've had in the past at this thing. Sarah Koenig, Mark Maron, Aisha Tyler, Alex Bloomberg, Roman Mars, Anna Sale, and some amazing keynote speaker announcements for 2017 are coming soon.
Podcast Movement is a great place to meet other podcasters, advertisers, and connect with over 50 service and equipment providers, as well as other influencers in the space.
You can learn all about it at podcastmovement.com, and you can use the code WOLF, W-O-L-F, to get the lowest registration price possible. Plus, you register by January 9th, Lex, what happens?
You get additional holiday savings.
Wow, that's a gift, really. A gift from us to you.
That's podcastmovement.com. The code is WOLF, and the Christmas will be merry.
In Anaheim.
And we're back with Hernan Lopez from Wondery talking about Wondery and his role there and what the company does. And as I teased before that incredibly stellar ad read that Chris and I put together, Fox is an investor in Wondery, your old employers. How did that come about and what kind of a partner are they?
It's a small investment. So the way it came about is when I was talking to my then boss, Peter Rice, about what I wanted to do next after leaving Fox. I told him, I'm really enthusiastic about having my own company. I didn't finish answering the question of why podcasting. I also...
I thought you left that as suspense for the listener through the ad.
Well, remember, but nobody, there was a number of things that I was interested about from the space itself, but I also wanted to create my own company. Because remember that in television, I was there for 20 years. I saw a lot of people, we bought companies. You were at MySpace, so you remember that feeling of buying companies and then seeing what they build, and then the companies would go, the founders would go away. And I really wanted to create a company. I wanted to start something from scratch. So when I told Peter Rice about it, he said that he'd like to invest in the company, and that's the degree of their involvement. Obviously, I have lots of friends over at Fox. We're talking to them in a number of connections about opening doors, about many, many opportunities.
I mean, I've noticed that Wondery shows tend to run more ads for Fox properties than most other podcasts I listen to. So I'm admittedly a little bit jealous, but I didn't know if it was part of Fox's thought, hey, if Hernan can create more of this inventory, then we'll have a new place to find potential viewers and get them back to Fox properties, if that was a piece of it.
I actually had to talk them into it because Fox had bought, but so far the only campaign that we had is Fox Searchlight. We were running Jackie on Secret Scrums and Audio Tape, but they had already appreciated the power of podcasting as an experiment. And I went to them and told them, and this is an argument that you can use, one of the most, not only with Fox, but with every other television network, one of the single biggest challenges that a new show has in order to be marketed this day and age is that a lot of people just won't even watch a new show, won't even consider it, unless a friend recommends it, right?
Yep.
So there's nothing closer to having a friend recommend it that having a podcast host recommend the show. So that's...
I will say, actually, just to talk shop for a minute, that I guess the whole show is that. But on the ad sales side, TuneIn has really been an explosive category for us overall. We have lots of television shows and lots of movies across many networks and you know, production companies that want to promote themselves on podcasts. And the struggle that we have faced sometimes, I'm dealing with an issue with this right now, actually, is... some of these companies that are still forward-thinking enough that they want to advertise on podcasts are still old-school enough in their media buying perspective that they think, well, we don't want to use your measurement window. We want to buy the ads from a week before the show goes up until the show launches. And certainly with your shows hosted on Art 19, that's something you can do. But somebody like Bill Simmons or WTF, where they, because they're so topical or because they do so well on kind of baked-in ads, they don't even want to go to insertion, the ad's going to be there. And so they want to get paid for the ad's duration, and they don't want to just get paid for a week's worth of impressions. Have you found then that the insertion side of things is helpful? Are you selling things on tight windows like that?
We are because we know that it's very important for them to be able to know to give the message, tune in next week or tune in. We haven't had anybody ask for a specific time, but it's something that we can offer.
They could.
Can I ask you a little bit about the shows that you're generating yourself and what you've chosen as the content executive to make in your first sort of, you know, foray into the world of podcasting? You have two dramas, or rather two fictionalized stories, I should say, multi-character. One of them is a musical, which I think is just fantastic. Why did you decide to take the leap into something like that, as opposed to, say, a network of talk shows or something like that?
Because
more traditional.
Space, we both, Jeffrey and I, know storytelling very well. It's the space that we come in. We come from drama, from scripted, and we saw an opportunity. If you look at the UK, where they never stop making radio drama, the BBC makes 500 hours a year. And in the US, there were many audio dramas before we came in, but none done by a company. Up until Gimlet did Homecoming and we did Secret Scrams and Audio Tape, you look at all the other audio drama that's in the space came from independent producers who really love audio drama. And we saw an opportunity to create a space, to create a specific positioning for
right, you have
for
a footprint sales. In it now.
Exactly. And that supports our position as the network of storytellers.
So my question, I have two questions. One is, do you have a particular aesthetic that you're trying to express through this medium? And then the second part of that question is really, what do you think the audience wants now that they didn't want, or that they wouldn't want about like the last heyday of audio drama? You know, if you think about the things that were made through the 50s and 60s, even up to CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which was the last one I remember listening to, they had a certain kind of style. What are you looking to make, and what do you think the audience really wants?
I think the really cool thing about audio drama, very different from television or any kind of of medium where you're watching is that in audio drama, you picture yourself in the middle of the action, right? It's different. In TV, you have, or in movies, you're essentially looking at a screen that has specific actors chosen by the director and the casting director, and they look one way. You can make them look at it in a different way. Whereas in audio drama, you'll create a mental picture in your head that is stronger than anything that you'll ever see.
And what do you think the audience hopes for from audio drama now? Like, what are they searching for? Because I can think in my own mind, I want something that feels less stagey, more cinematic, that has some kind of real emotional attachment that's not necessarily just, coconut shells imitating the sound of a horse running across the prairie.
I think they want and they come to expect the kind of quality of storytelling that they're used to in television. So if you look at, I assume you listen to Secret Crimes?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Oh, I mean, it's beautifully made. I think you're, it feels very contemporary, even through the choice of the performers that you use to do these scripts, to perform these scripts. I guess I'm picking your brain because we're also interested in making these things. But do you go to Hollywood then and have to, you have a wealth of probably friends who are writers there and people that you've worked with, Jeffrey has worked with them as well. Do you have to retrain them to write for audio?
Absolutely.
And what do you have to tell them?
Well, we have to tell them to forget about 1-0 at least.
Yeah, at least one, probably several.
That's the first part of the conversation. But then you need to tell them the kind of things that you can't do. There are many things that you can do in video, including the number of characters that you can tell. In audio, you can't tell a story with Game of Thrones. You would not work in audio.
Many characters.
Yeah.
Scale in general doesn't work in audio. You need to handhold. You need to do what we did with Secret Crimes, what Gimlet did with Homecoming, introduce the characters in layers, little by little, make sure that there are distinctions in the voices. But one of the things you asked about what audiences are expecting, they want to be surprised. They want to hear, why would they listen to anything if it weren't something that will teach them something or entertain them or amaze them in a way that they wouldn't have before? And I think we probably came closer to that experience with Wait, Wait, Don't Kill Me, the musical satire of Serial.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that is a truly ambitious thing to do, to take on the writing of a musical, because music itself can be so controversial. And it's not the word I'm looking for, Lex. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't like the style of music,
well, like,
subjective.
Right.
Thank you.
And it's not just a musical, it's a parody. And I have to be a huge fan of satire and parody, as regular listeners may know of my affection for Weird Al Yankovic. But you took on some pretty big audio targets too, This American Life and Serial. The title itself is a play on everyone's favorite game show podcast. But that's an ambitious thing to take on.
We're essentially making it, the whole play is about our obsession with true crime, and it's about how in reality we try to explain, we make fun of ourselves, of listeners, anybody who's ever found themselves obsessively listening to a true crime television show or podcast or anything will find themselves in this series. And there's a lot of inside jokes in it, but the clip I want to play is essentially a jingle for Online Correspondent Chimp.
Online Correspondence Chimp. Online Correspondence Chimp. Don't be a dummy, don't be a wimp. Use Online Correspondence Chimp.
Online Correspondence Chimp.
Doop doo ba, doo ba doo ba.
Online Correspondence Chimp.
It's catchy.
Doop doo ba, doo ba doo ba.
I mean, it's great, and it reminds me a little bit of when you think about, like, 5 minute Shakespeare. The more you know the original, the more you can appreciate the humor.
Or Tom Lehrer.
Nice. Right.
It reminds
exactly.
me of Tom Lehrer a little
yes.
bit. Yeah.
So one other ad sales question I have coming out of that is, you know, I would say that in general, mid-roll, we love host reads, right? You were talking earlier on the TuneIn side about how it's the closest thing you can get to a trusted friend recommendation. I think advertisers have struggled to match the success they can have on a hosted first-person show with narrative shows, narrative fiction or nonfiction shows, because, I mean, Serial aside, there's less of an authentic host to connect to, especially in the fictional side. Have you experimented with different ad formats in some of your scripted shows that are maybe better suited to that format versus a host read on a host-driven show?
Precisely for that reason is that Sigur Skansen Norrtäpe is hosted. We hired David Reinstrom, who for many years has been the host of Radio Drama Revival, and he loves the medium. And he's the one that does the intro, the outro, and he has a very particular voice and a very particular sense of humor, and he does really good ad reads. And in fact, you were at the podcast Upfront, where we played that famous Blue Apron spot where David was taping himself with his wife opening the Blue Apron box. And that was such a crowd pleaser because that's a show where we were able to get our spot, where we were able to get all the rational talking points, so all the selling points with the emotional connection that came from David actually opening the box and cooking with his real wife.
Yeah. I'm curious, your mention of David sparked this thought. I'd love to know who you work with. Who are the people at Wondery who really help you make these shows and work with the network? Just tell me a little bit about some of your staff.
There's seven of us. We just, in addition to Jeffrey and myself, Jeffrey Glazer comes from 20th Century Fox. Our first employee was Royce Wathford. He's the chief of staff. He's in charge of our operations, our office.
You hired him first before there were people under him to
absolutely.
Be the chief of.
Absolutely.
Oh, very smart.
Right. And he comes from Fullscreen before that from Regency movies. Christina Haro is our director of brand partnerships. She comes from Univision in Los Angeles as well. And we just hired Carol Chaklesian, who I'm sure you know was from Oxford Road, one of the biggest buyers in the podcasting space. And Lori Prater just joined in from WNYC.
Yeah, I worked with her. So that's a great team of people. And do you find that you are hiring the content side folks on a project basis, or are you
Precisely.
Are doing it that way? So it's much Precisely. More like television in some ways.
Precisely. So all of the shows are paid on a per episode basis. Obviously, we have a development budget, and then the host, the producer, everybody's paid per episode.
Now, Wondery is doing something that television typically does not do, which is that you have an open call on the website for show ideas submissions.
So brave.
And, you know, I'm sure that Fox does not have a similar feature on its TV website. So I'm curious, what made you decide to do that? And what's the average quality of the pitches you receive there?
We've received actually some quality pitches from there. Obviously, like anything, that when you do an open call, you need to give people a process in order to send their ideas, because otherwise we'll send ideas to the contact us page. And you got to be careful, because if it just so happens that they send you an idea and you were working on something similar, then they're going to feel that you took it. Exactly. So we have an open call, I guess... For content, precisely because we want people to think of us when they're thinking about their ideas. And we are a network of storytellers. We love partnering with storytellers. But one of the things that we want to grow is we want to grow the network. You guys are doing, you have the same business model that we have. So we want to make sure that when podcasters reach that level of listeners where they are ready to join a network, they think of us as one of the options.
Perfect. We're reaching the end of the year. It's one of those times when you start to think about the future. And of course, all of us in podcasting love to talk about what we think the future is going to be. Eric Newsom, I think it was today, published a short piece in the Nieman Lab, right, about his sense that there was a great stratification ahead, where the networks like Wondery and Midroll, Gimlet and the others, and as well as some legacy media companies like WNYC and NPR, would occupy more of the space, and that it would get much more difficult for so-called indie podcasters to find a way to find an audience. And I wonder if you share his sense of that happening, or if you have some other vision for the future.
In theory, you could see how that would happen, but if you look at reality, you have Lore, you have Anna Faris, you have so many great independent podcasts that are doing fantastic numbers, that are doing advertising revenue without a network. Obviously, we think that podcasters benefit from being part of our network, otherwise we wouldn't offer that service to them. But I don't see it as black as white, but I haven't read Eric's blog.
That's right. We comment on stuff we haven't read all the time.
I read it today on the bus into Manhattan. And Erica Pascasson, and he's very smart. I also kind of disagree. His part of his thesis, and he wasn't saying that he supports, that he wants this to happen, just that he thought it was inevitable, was right. that there was going to be an increased stratification by virtue of big players, I think, like us, moving to wall up their content.
Yes.
So you have to use this app to hear it and this app to hear it. And I was thinking on the bus, I don't think that's right, although it is sort of right for what happened in video, right? Streaming video, you've got shows you can only watch on Netflix, you've got shows you can only watch on Amazon. But the reality is there's a similar move right now where every TV and every set-top box and every, you know, tablet-style device has the ability to watch stuff from everybody. With podcasts, people are going to want to hear, and Apple just this week, as they released iOS 10.2, put out a TV app where the idea is, let me combine all of those sources. So if you watch stuff from this place and this place and this place, you can watch them all in one thing. So even as everybody's trying to put up their silos, there's this push to say, let me give you a place to listen to every, or to watch everything. So I think that if, listen, we have a walled garden of our own in Howell.
Howell, right.
And we still want to make as many, we want our shows to be heard by as many people as possible. And I think
sort of the creative people, right?
Exactly.
No one will be satisfied if they think there's one more listener out there that they could get.
Well, that's one of the most frustrating things. And actually, Netflix doesn't have this problem anymore, but they used to, many years ago, when content creators were going to different networks and considering Netflix in the mix. At the time, television networks said, you know what, if your show is on Netflix, you don't know whether people watch it or not, so you won't be satisfied, right?
Right.
So that's good and bad. I think they don't have as much of that problem anymore. But it's one of the key things that good content creators want. They want their content to be heard by as many people as possible.
So let me ask you to give some advice to those independent people. If you could address them all, the dozens who listen to this podcast and then the thousands of people are actually making shows out there, what would you tell them to pay attention to and do on their own behalf to reach those audiences?
Join Wondery or Midroll?
That's a good answer. But I'm thinking more sort of the quasi-spiritual content development side of your brain.
The advice we gave to everybody, I think it's too obvious. I mean, you got to pay attention to the quality of the audio. You got to pay attention to the quality of the episode notes and the descriptions. You gotta start from your base, and you gotta know exactly who you're talking to, and you gotta give them a reason. Why should they be listening to your podcast where there are 350,000 podcasts to listen to? And that's becoming a high and high bar. One of the things I don't know if you notice, Lex and Chris, this year, is that I noticed that the big shows tend to get bigger.
Yes.
Almost automatically, right? Where the smaller shows, you really have to throw, you know, light some gas under them in order to make them.
That's right. I mean, they used to have a long development time, right? Because not that many people were podcasting, so you could wait 5 years and see what happened. I don't think that happens anymore.
Right.
And it's a problem, I think, that's really endemic to digitally distributed things, where everything that's most popular surfaces at the top of those most popular lists. So of course they get more, and everything that's not on that list doesn't do as well. It happens in the App Store.
Besides the metadata and nice artwork, are there any other tricks you'd be willing to share that you do with your network to help ensure that it finds those extra few listeners?
I'm taking notes
listeners.
Again.
Cross-promotion is a key part of what we do. So to give you an example, this next Tuesday, all 15 of our shows, we couldn't do it with all 22, but 15 of our shows are going to come together to create a special called The Gift of Listening. And it has a very altruistic purpose. I do believe, actually you were there in the room when I said this, that listening has listening is very powerful when it comes to building bridges, to creating empathy. Listening is better than shouting, no question, it's better than ignoring. Listening has a power that looking at information on social media in short bursts or even watching doesn't really do. And in particular, listening to podcasts. Podcasts, I think, have the opportunity to emerge as the place for thoughtful conversations and for honest exchanges of opinion in a way that in cable news, you can't do it. In social media, you can't do it. So, and in radio, it's been bifurcated. So I think that podcasts should take that place and essentially position themselves as a place for thoughtful conversations. And what we'll do with the Gift of Listening is have essentially the hosts of all these shows will interview each other, and they'll talk about why listening to them is so important, and why they started podcasting and why people should listen to their show, essentially.
I think I'm in love with you now.
Well, on that note, Hernan, thank you so much for joining us on today's Wolf Den. Where can our listeners find you online? Where should they go?
They can find me on Twitter at Hernan Lopez, and they can find us on Wondery at Wondery.com.
Well, thank you again for joining us. You can subscribe to this show at earwolf.com or on iTunes or Stitcher and rate us in any of your favorite places to listen.
And we should thank Jared O'Connell, our engineer, and Paul Riesmandel, who produced this show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Chris Gethard, and here with me is dream analysis expert
Gary Richardson.
And we are here to give you a taste of a brand new podcast called In Your Dreams, presented exclusively by the fine folks at Casper.
We listen to the wildest, weirdest dreams submitted to us by you, our listeners. And we do our best to figure out just what those dreams could possibly mean.
I look over the side of my bunk bed, and there are Huey Lewis in the news.
You're saying this person might have interests in style and fashion specifically. You can tell that from that voicemail.
99% certainty.
Plus, we'll be joined by some very special guests.
The word mortality comes to mind.
Mortality?
Blood.
Bloodtality.
Subscribe to In Your Dreams right now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.